This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Here I am broadcasting from home again in our fourth week of sheltering in place during this pandemic. I hope everyone else is staying safe and home and well, and want to give a big shout out to all of those healthcare workers and everyone who is doing the essential businesses that need to be taken care of, whether that you're on the front lines in the hospitals or EMTs, or whether that you're other kinds of security people who are helping us, as well as those who are in grocery stores and banks and other kinds of essential businesses. Thank you all very much for everything that you've been doing for us. This week's episode is brought to you and sponsored again by our friends over at themagicbookshop.com. We want to thank Eric Citron again for sponsoring the podcast. And also during this time right now, he's got a special deal that he's recognizing that we are all in a financial downturn right now and everyone's trying to do the best that we can. He is offering a 40% off of your order when you spend $85 or more at themagicbookshop.com, which is a pretty significant savings, I would say. All you need to do when you check out, just use the promo code MAGIC, and you'll get that 40% off when you spend $85 or more, which will be pretty easy when you're buying magic books. And if you're going to be buying less than $85, then use the code MAGIC WORD, all one word, MAGIC WORD, in the promo code, and you get 15% off of all your orders. And I think that he should be applauded for everything he does. Thank you very much. I appreciate Eric, you helping us during this time. And also, I want to thank the Magic Bookshop for giving us the special prize that we've been running this contest for the last 3 weeks. Eric is going to be sending $100 worth of magic books, a variety of books, to a lucky listener who had registered for the contest. We've been running this contest for the last 3 weeks, and the winner's name has now been selected. So Eric will be getting in touch with you soon, and to learn who the winner is, just stick around for at the end of this podcast to hear who that was. Also, we are ending that particular contest, but we are beginning another one. Thanks to Michael Breger, who is one of our friends of the Magic Word, that he is offering a bundle of his ebooks that are available. He just has a new book out called Expert at the COD Table, C-O-D, COD Table, by S.W. Ordfish. Anyhow, it is a delightful read, a lot of fun, with some really excellent tricks in there then as well. Anyhow, he is offering that along with his other ebooks in a bundle, which the contest we'll talk more about on the end of this podcast here then as well. So stick around for that, and the details will be available, of course, on the website. So now let's get into our episode this week. This past year, I really haven't had an opportunity to travel as much as I wanted to internationally, as I was traveling to so many conventions across the country. I think in 2019, I attended about 8 different conventions, or maybe more, and had an opportunity to run into so many of you, as well as not being able to travel overseas. There were overseas magicians who had traveled here, and I got a chance to visit with them. Well, from time to time, there are other opportunities where that we have visiting magicians from other countries coming to our shores, and particularly coming through Houston, where I reside, and that was the case here recently. Luve Melander is from Sweden, and he had come through expecting to do a show for a corporate client, and he had no sooner arrived whenever that they had canceled their event, and so he was here for a few extra days than what he had planned because his flights had been arranged differently anyhow. So during that time, that made it our advantage where we could actually get together and talk. So he had an opportunity then to stay at my home for an evening, and we went out to dinner and also had a chance to chat. And I know that you'll really enjoy our conversation we had. Luve, again, being from Sweden, has a little bit different take than Americans do, and I just wanted to kind of pick his brain a little bit to find out how their magic might be different over there, particularly if they're working in restaurants. Do they work for tips? You know, working at weddings. And in particular, he's a trade show magician who works with these large corporate clients. And so I thought it'd be interesting to hear his take on that then as well. So let's get into it. Please welcome my guest here this week, Mr. Luve Malanda, here on The Magic Word. So today we're going to be talking with a trade show magician, someone who is here all the way from Sweden, and a good friend of mine. Please welcome Luve Molander.
Thank you very much.
You sound like a radio voice. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes.
We got
yes.
this great voice, though.
Well,
Did you ever do radio or anything in Sweden?
Actually, no. When I was young, I really didn't like my voice. I think I had a bad voice. Uh-huh. And when you met Eugene Berger and Blackstone Jr., they had like dynamic voices.
Oh, boy, do they.
You're like, wow, when they talked, you listened.
Yes.
And I don't know why, but during the years, perhaps my voice has improved. I don't know.
Well, you sound like you. And so, again, I wanted to, first of all, welcome you. Thanks very much for coming. So you happen to be over in the U.S. then right now. You were originally going to be doing a show. And then we are sitting here right now during this coronavirus pandemic and everything. And by the time this gets released, this may be over or may still be. I don't know where it'll be. But tell us a little bit about what happened as far as coming over and...
Well,
canceled.
Perhaps this interview will be called that Corona interview. Yeah, oh,
yeah,
yes,
way back, yeah, Corona.
Because actually, I was going to do a show tomorrow in Houston, dressed like a guy who died in 1900. He is actually 201 years old, and that's the founder of this company, and it was canceled. wait a minute, cancel. That was English, the other one.
Yeah, cancel.
Cancel is English, yes. I try. England is tomato, tomato. And
it's a difference between English and American.
Yes.
And Texan, too.
Yeah. And my youngest son is studying in Austin, so I was like on my way. I haven't seen him for 7 months, and suddenly everything went to birth. I mean, like the situation we are now, this Sunday evening, I don't even know if I can get back to Sweden.
Wow. So your future is kind of unknown. You may be here for a while.
Yeah. And all of you will have competition. No.
Well, as far as when you came over, it was not during a time when you had to be quarantined. First of all, is Sweden one of the countries that has been on the list? Do you know that you can't travel? In other words, if you would have left today, you couldn't? Or what's the status? Do you know?
Since I left, even in my little hometown, they have like 15 person, I think. And Sweden is a small country. Mm-hmm. But I think so far, when we speak, Italy and China is worth. And we see, they said in Austin that, well, we have like 5 people now. It's a million of people there.
Yes.
But they expect much, much more. And rapidly it will increase. Mm-hmm. So this is, sadly enough, perhaps just a start for a really long what do you call it? Redudgeon? No, everything goes back in business and everything. It's called...
A recession?
Recession, yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a difference between a recession and a depression. A depression is... a recession is whenever that you're out of work, and a depression is when I'm out of work.
I will have something here for my not upcoming depression. Listen to this.
And verdict?
And the verdict is, you know, Scott actually can see my hair rise on my arms. It's the absolutely best Martina I ever heard. It's like this is magic.
And that's because that I've got the Swedish martini here using a little Svedka.
Yeah, and that was so annoying. Being from Sweden, and I have never seen that vodka.
Svedka.
No, never.
Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Svedka.
Svedka, yeah.
I assume, yeah.
Yeah, good vodka. Well, and so welcome to the U.S. and welcome to drinking martinis with me.
Thank you. We have to do this more.
Well, come over more often. It sounds like that if you may not get out of here for a while, you may be coming back down. Now, you're going to be in Austin, actually, tomorrow, and you're going to be giving a lecture while you're here?
Yes.
Kind of at least since, I mean, they've already paid you to come over and paid you for the show, and so you got money in your pocket.
Exactly.
But you're not doing what you had prepared to do.
It's an old friend of mine called Bertil Fredström, but no American can pronounce his name correctly.
How do you say Bertil?
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody says Bertil. So he uses mostly his artist name, Black Bert.
Yeah.
So he's arranging this and you have to meet him. He has a great collection of magic.
He's a great guy. I think he's going to be coming up actually as the president of the Texas Association of Magicians.
Oh yeah.
In the next couple of years when we host this in Austin next time. I don't know if this year it's going to be in Fort Worth and next year maybe Austin and that or the year after. Either 21 or 22. So we're going to get into trade shows in just a minute, but going back to Sandvik and the person that you were going to be impersonating, tell me a little bit about kind of how that came about and what you were planning to do, what you had prepared to do in creating this guy.
You caught me off guard here. Okay, this character. First of all, trade show is just one part of what I do.
Okay.
I do stage shows. I'm in the company business for since 1984. Mm-hmm. Close-up shows. I do everything except big illusions. I had a magic theater with a friend for 15 years, but after that, no big illusions at all. Takes too much space and effort. Mm-hmm. When I started doing things for Sandvik, now all of you that have been working trade shows, you have the suit, you have the nice trousers,
right.
You have a skirt. Everything has to look fresh and nice. If you're traveling around the world, I realize I got an idea. Because the student in my hometown, and perhaps not just in Sweden, when they have some kind of graduation, they have a big overall, mm-hmm. and they put marks everywhere. It looks crazy and fun. And I was thinking, wait a minute. If I have an overall with a fresh, nice T-shirt, and I have their logo on my back, and my name printed on my breast pocket, mm-hmm. and over here, and I have a very cool, not a baseball cap, I have something else. I think it's originally for chefs, with a logo on. I will be like walking around the commercial pillar also. They can see, oh, you're Sandvik. Hmm. Then what's happened is an extra surprise. But I separate myself from how the rest are dressed.
Okay.
So I have like 18 different overalls in my house.
Okay.
With different companies. And
oh, so you've done this for other companies as well.
Oh, yes. And mm-hmm. and so they pay everything because I have a tailor who remake, put some extra pockets
wow.
in. Hmm. Because in an overall, it doesn't have to be super perfect like a nice tuxedo or something.
Like, yeah, yeah. Like jacket.
And you don't need to be extra cautious of everything because this is an overall is made to do quite hard work with.
Right. It basically jeans.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I can show you some pictures later.
But you have all these pockets that are sewn into that, so this way you can put cards and coins and ropes or whatever you want. That are,
I can have a lot of stuff on me.
A lot of stuff, yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
And I always say, when I do my walkabout, because when you're doing the work, you know, sometimes I will do a walkabout, and I get invited to competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And I do something in their booth. They're just laughing. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of the others walking, see the competitor's name and see me, Sandvik, make them laugh.
Hmm.
No one complains. So wherever in Malaysia, a security guy takes my arm. I mean, you know how big the trade show's room can be.
Sure, of course.
Huge.
Yeah.
And this was the UGA in the Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur. Okay. And I was just come back from the lunch. In the first exhibition hall, when it was a big, like 20 cameramen and security and everything, and we were our booth was in hall 3. So when he grabbed me and said, "Can you do a trick for the president?" I can hear myself say, "Yeah, no problem." In the same time, I'm thinking, how could you know I'm a magician?
Huh.
because, you know, I was dressed in overalls.
Right, you just look like a worker.
So I was thinking, well, he's the security guy. They know stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. They've been keeping their eye on
yeah.
you.
Huh. And the thing I did with the president actually ended up in the newspaper.
What'd you do? What trick did you do?
Actually, I have like 6-7 tricks that's my own. And the one I did has taken me around the world. Hmm. And if I have to take away everything except one thing, I will keep that. And why? Well, actually, it took 13 years to find the perfect presentation to the effect. And the psychology and the thing, how the people react, makes it. Hmm. And I can't speak about what I'm doing, but I can show you later.
Okay. Interesting. So it's something that is kind of your signature effect.
Yeah, I created it in the beginning of the 80s because I knew that in America, you can actually sometimes approach a table and say, hi, you want to see some magic?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, Scott, do that in Sweden and they will think you're mad. It doesn't work in all countries. The thing I develop works everywhere.
100% of the time, anywhere.
Yeah. Huh. And you will realize, tomorrow at the lecture, they will also hear about this. Because it's took 13 years. And when you see it, you can take it like this.
Hmm.
Because you understand how it works.
Right away.
You will say, all right, yes. So that's my start up. Oh, let's say like this. I remember in Houston, I saw a TV reporter making some announcement. And when he was done, and they shut down the camera and everything, I approached him and said, hey, excuse me, have you seen the latest invention from Sandvik? And there it starts. And when that thing happens,
mm-hmm.
2-3 meters, you know, when I walk from them, I hear, excuse me, can we film this? And I go like, yeah, okay. And Sandvik, you know, free time on TV.
Yeah, sure.
And every place in an exhibition, in a trade show, they've been in a camera team, they filmed it.
Hmm. And so it is out there. It's on YouTube?
No.
Okay. Okay,
nope.
Got it. Well, let me ask you, you were talking about going around tables and hospitality suites and that kind of a thing. Is there a market in Sweden for close-up magicians to work restaurants?
Well, not really.
It's a big thing here, obviously.
Yeah, but not really. I remember I was talking with Tommy Wonder. And he said it was hard to get up to have a good pay. You know, they're like they don't want to pay what I want.
Right.
I said something that he's like, wow, that's a good way of saying it, because if you want have the right kind of money, instead of saying, but you know, you don't buy one show. I mean, during the time I'm working, I might do 20 shows.
That's right.
And sometimes, you know. Suddenly, like 20 shows. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, it sounds cheap.
Yeah, when you think about per show value. Right?
Yeah, but mostly it's companies who need that kind of work. And otherwise, I love to do close-up shows.
Do you find that there are more opportunities for hospitality suites maybe in Sweden than there are in the U.S. or other countries?
No, I think it's bigger here.
Bigger here than it is there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
I will also talk about at my lecture that, I mean, if you're in a theater, the light goes down, the audience goes silent, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're in an environment where they've been dining, you know yourself, you know, and you go up there and you should start
right.
the show,
right.
I have worked so many years to find the perfect start. And I'm sad to say it took me like 30 years to find the start that works.
No, I can perfectly understand that. I mean, it seems constantly searching for that good opener, if you will, and how do you get the audience on your side?
Yes.
And it's not just what you do, but what you say and how you say it and your timing.
You said one thing, to get your audience on your side. Mm-hmm. Let's make an example. You know Married Children, Al Bundy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first 100 TV shows, he opened the doors and say, hi, Peg, and he starts, and it's funny, yeah. right? But suddenly, from nowhere, the program starts, the TV show starts, he opened the door, and the audience goes totally wild. He hasn't done nothing.
He hasn't done anything yet, right?
Nothing.
Right. Yeah.
But the audience knows him, you know.
Lally Bongo had a character, you know, and it took him a while. But, yeah, you're right. After he would come out, it's like we know that guy and yeah. we know the character. And so it takes a while to get the audience on your side. In that case, he had a television show where that, you know, week after week they kind of knew that. So before long that it's just like with popular comedians, let's say here in the U.S. with Jerry Seinfeld, when he would work comedy clubs, would come out and try new material, and people would immediately start laughing when he'd come out on stage, thinking he's going to start doing some of his classic material, and then he's trying new stuff. It's like, you know, that may or may not work, and he's just trying new stuff. I mean, just as a normal comedian would. But he is already accepted, if you will,
yeah.
and considered to be hilarious and successful, and we're going to love him. And so he has kind of already crossed that barrier. And so he's kind of got an advantage. And the same thing with Ali Bongo. Whenever that he had created that image, and whenever he opens the door, you're right, kids are just like, oh, go crazy. You know?
I never, ever search for fame. Zero. Not interested.
Mm-hmm. What do you seek?
I tell you what to seek. I'm just going to say that. And if you're not a known face for the audience,
yeah.
the quicker you can make them hey, this is a nice guy.
Yes,
I
you
like
want them
him.
To love you.
Yes, the quicker, the easier it is. You tell me, I got this question sometimes, and many, many, many years ago, 86, I think it was a bank that shut down in a town not so far away from me. Everybody lost their work, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they threw a party, and it was like 80 people with their wives and everything, and I walk in on the stage, and it's like a funeral.
Oh, my. Yeah,
40
wow.
minutes later.
40 minutes?
Yes, they're laughing. It's extra number.
Okay.
And to see those smiles, the laughter, you know,
right.
that's I'm addicted to that.
Oh, that's we all are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a problem when I'm in airports because see all those, you know, the people that works there, totally dead faces that seems to have like yeah they have a serious job, you know, it's the security and everything, but I always think don't do anything, don't try, don't do nothing,
right?
So I've been to the States 22nd times, and 96 it was one woman checking my passport.
Okay.
And she goes like, oh my god, is your name Love? Well, it's pronounced Love, but all the women can pronounce it Love. So. Okay. And she starts on my second name. And it goes like this. No, that's my family name. She goes like, Bjorn. Yeah, you remember Bjorn Borg, the tennis player?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I tell her that Bjorn means bear in Swedish.
It means what?
Bear.
Bear, okay.
Yeah. So she looks at the passport and is like, oh my God, your name is Love Bear. And she was laughing flat out. And the security was like, what's happening here? Like, and I never thought about it.
Huh.
I never thought about it. I'm the Love Bear.
You know, I've been watching a series on TV on the History Channel called The Vikings. And there's a guy, Bjorn, who is a central character. And I didn't realize, and he is a big bear of a
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now you know.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so are trade shows as big of a deal? Of course, Sweden's a smaller country, but and I assume that they have fewer, obviously, trade shows than we have over here. But in relation to other kinds of corporate work, you say you do other kinds of things, not just the trade shows. But are there a lot there or other countries? You go over to Finland and then to...
overall...
Yeah. Trade
shows have gone down thanks to internet.
Well, now see, that was where I was kind of going, because when I talked with Paul Gertner and some other guys, you know, about this, about how that they were in their heyday and what they're doing now and how it kind of has come down. And I was wondering if you were seeing that same kind of attrition and it's fallen off also? business?
Yes.
Harder to get those kind of, that kind of work?
Yes. And to be totally honest, 4 trade shows a year is perfect for me. Mm-hmm. I've seen other magicians at trade shows, how they work, and no one really work the way I do. It takes so much more of yourself. So many times I ask myself, what are you doing? What are you doing? And you think, wait a minute, 10 days here, plus, no, that's a good money. Yeah, no, come on. And I keep going.
Sure.
But to do it too often, it will kill me. It will kill that.
Really?
Yeah. It's like...
So it's not really what you would want to do. I mean, like Paul Gertner and other guys are doing, you wouldn't want to do too many of those.
Not too many. Huh. No, because I have to have a bit of that, the spark.
But, dude, there is a spark. Well, to me, what I love about trade shows is the requirement for creativity and to customize something. And so it makes me really think, okay, what can I do with my magic knowledge to customize something for this company that, I'll look at their website, their splash page, what is it that they're trying to say, and what can I say with a magic message to stop traffic, basically. Mm. And I find that a challenge, and I just love that challenge.
And you did that challenge extremely well with Sandvik, because a moment ago, Scott showed me an effect that's in your lecture that they can buy from Murphy's Magic. Mm-hmm. And what do you call that effect is called?
That was actually a Simon Aronson trick called Shuffleboard, B-O-R-E-D. And which I call it the Book of Facts.
Mm. And all of you out there doing trade shows, buy that record, because only that trick is like worth the money. But it's more. It's like 3.5 hours?
3.5 hours, yeah.
Wow.
For the DVD, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. No, I really like
the download.
I mean, if you've been in the business, I've been doing it professionally since 1984, you can quickly spot that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that really works. So I like that. And
Thank you.
Yes.
You know, whenever I had done that, after I was finished at the end of the day on the taping, and I put everything aside, and they stopped rolling the camera. It's like, oh, I forgot there was this. And then I could have done this. And I had probably another half hour worth of stuff at least I could have done. It's like, oh, I forgot. But I really wanted to put everything out there on that DVD digital download, which is available on the website there at themagicwordpodcast.com and in the store. Anyhow, I felt like that I am getting to an age that, you know, if I'm ever going to release it, it may as well be now. You know, I'm going to get around. I can lecture to other cities, but I'm not going to make it around to the whole world and that they can have access to it this way. So that's why that I've done that. Apparently that Murphy's does not do their at the table anymore. They've decided it's just too... it takes too much time and effort for little profit. And Penguin has been a big competitor, and they've actually been the ones who won, I guess, in the contest there. So they don't do the at the table anymore, but they still have those available in their archives. So you've lectured, and you're lecturing. You're talking about then tomorrow night. Have you lectured other places around the country?
Yes.
Or the world,
or? Actually, 1990, the Magic Castle.
Mm-hmm.
The only time ever when we did a floating bill in that way,
mm-hmm.
ever. Why? Because one of my oldest friends that unfortunately got sick, he was the first person in the world who made a little gimmick that could rewind threads. And we're talking 1985.
Wow.
The first guys from America saw that one was Michael Lamar and Daryl,
mm-hmm.
who I met 86. Last time I was in Austin was 89 when I was visiting Michael Lamar.
In Austin, Texas, yeah, because he used to live in Austin, yeah.
Yes, 1989. And the fun part, me and my friend Stefan Schützer had special built a pen. So he signed the card. Mm. He didn't realize he was holding the gimmick. Yeah, and at the castle, we did a thing where the bill was lying in the air with 3 movement. So it went up over the audience, and I remember John Carney was there, Michael Weir was there, and I think Daryl was there, and it stopped like this, and it went in circles over the heads, And even for us, you know, yeah. we never did it before.
Yeah.
And it went back, and it was not wobbling. It was like lying in there.
Yeah. Mm.
So sometimes I wish I had two colleagues that could do this with me sometimes.
Yeah.
But that was like one of the first ones. But I've been College of Magic in Cape Town. I've been doing in the Swedish Championship.
What's that like, by the way, down in Cape Town?
Oh.
I've heard a lot of things about that, and I know people who support that. They really need a lot of financial support and aid.
Yes.
What's that like?
You just mention it, and my heart gets warm, you know. You're walking in there with all the kids, mm-hmm. all these different ages. And I remember I said, all of you here, who would you like to work with magic for the rest of your life? You can mm-hmm. see some hands go up. Yeah, and you can see that spark, excitement. Spark. Because I always say, you know, if you know a few tricks, you know, you can have fun for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And I talk in my lecture, you don't learn a bunch of new tricks because everybody knows a lot of tricks. It's a way of thinking in certain ways.
Exactly. That's what I've always said, is that magic is a philosophy of life. It is a way of thinking. And once you have that, you can apply that to other things. Again, that goes back to the trade shows, in which that when I look at something, then I say, okay, how can I apply my magic knowledge to that? You know, and I could use this or this or this, you know, so I've got some different ideas. Same thing like with an out. If something doesn't go right, if the reel breaks, you know, what do you do? You know, you got to have an out. I remember talking to Mike Amar, and he said, well, the thread breaks, there's nothing you can do, basically. You know, it's like, all right, well, thanks a lot. Let's go to commercial break, you know.
I had one time the ring flight that on the stage, clink, I could feel it. Mm. And I will never forget how I can hear myself talking, but I didn't listen. I was thinking, how shall I make a new trick of this? And I actually found out the solution meanwhile I'm talking. So I made the ring disappear and reappear in, I made a rose napkin, and it was empty, and in the end, the ring, the flower bent over and the ring popped out. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing how my brain actually works sometimes better when I'm in a difficult situation. It likes turns on, really, mm-hmm. like, why? Well, but always have an out. Are you ever nervous?
Am I ever nervous? Let me answer that by saying, before I walk on stage, before I do my first trick, just had a show tonight. I'm standing in the cocktail lounge. The people are there. And I am nervous only for a moment before I approach the first group. And I think those butterflies are good. Jeff McBride had always said something about trying to make your butterflies fly in formation. You know, it's good to have those things. And I know you're not from the U.S., but years ago, Johnny Carson was had the Tonight Show here. And I had heard that he also was nervous when he was standing behind the curtain, just as Thurston was, you know. He would always look through the curtain. The famous story is, you know, he looked through the curtain and say, I love you, and kind of look at people in the audience and try to build himself up. I think that it's important that you do. You shouldn't just walk on thinking, well, I'm going to mail this in, meaning that I'm not going to worry about it. I got this. You know, I think that you need to have a little bit of excitement and nerves walking on. And whenever I'm on stage, whenever the music comes on, I walk on, I say my first joke, and I feel like I have the audience, and I've said hello, or I've said my first line, and I feel like that I have immediately made that connection with them. And so, yes, I think it's important, and yes, I do get nervous beforehand.
Personally, I do hope that is not 100% true, because Michael Amar and me are the same. Never, never nervous.
Never nervous.
Never nervous. And when I set my stuff, I know I have the things on me.
Yep.
I can speak to 2 seconds before I go on stage. Mm-hmm. And I often thought, I mean, I heard about this, that, oh, good to be nervous, good to be nervous. For me, it's like putting a switch on. Bam! I just, it's like, here we go. And walking on the stage, for a lot of people, lay people, that's the worst thing they can do. You and I, we're home.
Mm-hmm.
And my saying is, if you know your material and you have your outs, you should not be need to be nervous.
Never. No. Again, once you're there. I mean, but getting in there, you don't know what's exactly going to happen.
No.
But once you have control and you're actually walking on stage.
That is so fun. Because I spoke just a few days ago with a person. The craziness with audience. I did a few years ago, I had a TV audience for a very popular comedy show in Sweden. I did totally almost 200 shows. So you become professional how to handle them, because here comes lay people to audience. You can see famous people. It's cameras. It's an environment they're not used to see. So my goal is to make them relax, laugh. If it's a retake, laugh at the same joke.
Yeah.
Another time. So I had this psychology stuff with the magic going on, and it worked well. Then we had absolutely last episode to record, and every episode is having two different audience, and they take the best pieces. And I knew that in the first audience of the last program, it was a lot of people from my hometown. Mm-hmm. And I come from the northern part of Sweden, and it's a tough crowd. Mm-hmm. It's like Finland. Very tough crowd.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Oh,
so
yes.
Finland's a lot different than Sweden.
It's even harder, yeah.
Why is that, you think?
Well, it's the guys that a few minutes when you're done, they can pass you, and you they go closer to you and say, "That was very good." And you're like, "Oh, thank you. Thank you very much."
I wish you would have let me know during the show.
Yeah, exactly. No, but this first show, I do the same things. And it's like, "Oh, where's all the guys from my hometown?" Dead silence. And I do all this stuff.
Sure.
In the middle of the TV show, the biggest TV personality, like, he knocks my door. "Lube, what's with the audience?" And I said, "I don't know," because I couldn't reply. Well, most of them is from my hometown. I couldn't say that.
Yeah.
But then out with them, next audience, boom, as usual.
Yeah.
And I think you have a certain kind of personality of an audience. If you have too many of those spread out, somehow they suck the energy of the others to not do so much things. I don't know. But it's like... Because if you take one step back, was I lousy today? Well, no, same energy. But what was it?
An audience can be completely different. You know, when I was working in the Magic Island, was operating here in Houston, that I could do anywhere from 2 to 6 shows a night on stage, depending on how busy that it was. And the nice thing was, of course, you can do that same show over and over, and it makes a difference as to... Well, I mean, even though you're standing in the same place, you're doing this, delivering the same lines, your timing is the same, the audience can be completely different. And I remember Scott Hollingsworth, who was the entertainment director, used to say to me that whenever I would do a rock and shoe, you know, and I'd do that gag and I'd dump the rock out of my shoe, he said, if people didn't laugh, I realized that the reason they weren't laughing for other things in your show was because it's that audience. It's like, that's a hilarious bit, and they should be laughing. If they're not, then it's the audience. And so, okay, that's just a bad group. And the next time, you know, people are laughing, having a good time, I do the rock and shoe, and everything goes great. But he kind of used that as a thing that he would judge the rest of the show. If they didn't laugh, it's the audience, you know.
I was talking with a DJ once, interesting that you still have DJs. I mean, if you have 200 people and you play your music, no one is dancing. Are you continuing playing your music, or do you change the music? Well, if you change the music, suddenly things can happen. So sometimes I can feel the audience. What type is it tonight?
That's a very good point. I've seen DJs and been in dances in which the people get up and they finally hit the right thing, you know, or maybe it's the time or the alcohol or something, that people get up and start dancing. And then once they see that people are dancing, then they'll change the tempo a little bit, and it's like people will sit back down. It's like, you know, you had them and then you lost them. You know, and I think in magic, there's when you're performing, there's a lot to that too, that you're trying to get the audience on your side. And if you think you do have them, and then you think, okay, well, I'm in my zone, I'm going to try something new or different, now's the right time, it's like, you've lost them. You know, maybe you ought to stick with what you had. You know? Anyhow, I'm getting philosophical there.
Oh, yes.
So I wanted to get back still to differences, really, in what it's like in Sweden versus the U.S. And trade shows. And you were saying that it's very similar as far as the you know, things have kind of gone down. They're not quite as active as what they were before. Has that been something over the past year, two, 10 years? What has been slowly falling off a little bit, or is it
the past 4 or 5 years? I would say.
Okay. That sounds about right.
And the annoying thing is, I thought, if you write that you've been professional for 36 years, in my mind says, wow, if he's been professional for 36 years, he has to know his thing.
His stuff, yes.
No. We don't want an old fart. We want something new, fresh, a younger one. Some people actually think so.
Like with cruise ships. I think cruise ships are looking for the next young person.
Yeah. So that's sad. And then you had to rethink. And then I'm thinking, you saw the picture, how ugly I am as the old guy.
Okay, yes.
I had a 10-minute makeup class I took. And believe me, it's easier to make yourself ugly than you are than the opposite.
Okay, yeah.
But you interview one guy who was playing like a cowboy, and he changed his accent. Remember that one? He changed his accent.
Yes.
And I think it's important to adapt your age, because a good friend, Kevin James, he said two things. I mean, in our age, it's actually also clever to instead of taking this beautiful woman, 25, take her grandmother besides, because the 25-year-old beauty, she's very keen to look nice on stage instead of focusing on you and what's going to happen. Yeah. Meanwhile, perhaps an older woman will relax more and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I always, I mean, in my mind, I will turn 56 this year.
Okay.
In my mind, perhaps I'm 25. Mm-hmm. But it's important for me, even if it's the most beautiful woman here, I try to pick one 40-ish, something like that.
Okay.
And not too young.
Right.
Because.
Why?
It's, I did this before the Me Too thing.
Okay.
A crazy thing happened in November. I saved a woman for falling down from the stage.
Ooh.
I grabbed her, and 100% sure, I did not get my right hand on her bum. Do you say bum?
Breast or
no, bum.
Her bottom.
Bottom. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 100% sure. Yeah. And the next day, one of the bosses phoned me up and said, "Hey, Louis, great show yesterday. Funny. You will have more job. But you know, I have some criticism." "Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was many years ago. Oh, exciting to hear." Said, "Well, you know, Anna, she felt that you took her on her bum."
Wow.
I actually waited for a little bit of laughter there. And no. And I told him, well, I can't take away her feelings.
Right.
But if I didn't catch her, you know, she
would have fallen, injured herself.
And the weirdest part that really annoyed me is that I have no dirty jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I have no bad language. If I swear, I even say, you can peep yourself. You know,
sure.
I even... how do you say you censor myself?
Yourself, sure.
Yeah. So you didn't even edit. Did I need to edit this one? And still, I was like, what? So I remember, you know, John Howdy. We talk about him.
Yeah.
You know him and the others, that we have to be careful.
I was the Super Bowl magician in Houston some years ago, and the people who were running the activity. Had experience working in Disney World and Disneyland and Disney Paris and Japan, et cetera. And so they were hypersensitive to anything you might say that could be possibly construed as not being politically correct. And I had made some comment, and there were children in the audience. And I was reading a newspaper headline, and I was making some joke about headless body found on topless beach. I think that's hilarious. But the guy came over and said, you know, that's not really appropriate. It's like, really? Okay, well, I'll leave it out. That's fine, you know. But he just felt like that was not something that Disney would have approved.
Well, some people are too sensitive.
That's true. That's true. I'm going to back way up. You had just touched on something earlier about Tommy Wonder. Did you know Tommy Wonder well, pretty well? Or
I met him a few times, okay. But I can't say I knew him well.
He lived in where? Was he in Holland?
Holland, yes.
And that's not that far really from where you are.
No. No.
Well, and so you probably saw him at FISM and other kinds of conventions.
And conventions. And, you know, I met a lot of nice guys. I know.
Fred Capps?
Never Fred Capps.
I never met Fred Capps
either. No, I'm perhaps a bit too young for that. I had the pleasure to meet Di Vernon before.
Yeah.
We went to, and John Calvert we talked about.
Yes.
And and it's so fun. I changed David Williamson. Mm-hmm. I saw a great lecture with him at the castle, 89, 90 something. And he had one three-card trick. But I didn't like the way the counting was.
Okay.
And then that was 90. Let's see now. Was it? Wait, I have to think in Swedish now. 90, 100. Like 16 years later in convention, he told that he just found out that why don't do an Emsley instead? And I was like,
yeah,
I did that the same day at the lecture in 1990 because it's so I like to simplify, and that's the beauty also by sitting talking like this, because you're sometimes locked on certain things. By the way, I had to do a correction.
Okay.
Egil Meska, the tarantula.
The what?
The tarantula, the gimmick. The tarantula gimmick.
Oh, yes. David Stone's tool gimmick?
Pardon?
David Stone's tool gimmick?
No, the thing of the finger. Egil Meska. Egil Meska.
Yigo Masika.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
I pronounce it like a Swede.
Yeah. Yigo Masika. Okay.
But he gave credit to John Kennedy.
And
I was so surprised.
Okay.
Because the true credit goes to Stefan Schützer in Sweden. Because it was him who gave John Kennedy the rights to change his... He's thicker. So I was like surprised that
it wasn't from the pen. You're talking about from the pen or from the which gimmick are you talking about?
It's the one, the motor with the ring that spins and things, and you have a motor on the palm.
In the palm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I know John Kennedy, beautiful, nice guy,
yep.
And I think he just managed to forget about it.
Well, that's been said about Gregory Wilson also.
Oh, I have a nice Gregory Wilson story.
Okay.
But first, self-folding bill.
Yes.
That's also Stefan Schütz's invention.
Well, is it really? Yes. I love that.
Gosh,
that's an old one. I've been doing that since the 70s.
1989, we performed that at the Magic Castle. They told me actually to put up a show there, and that was a really nice memory. And we sold it, but then they just took it. And that was the most copied and ripped off trick of the 90s.
Yeah. It was such an easy thing for someone to make.
Yeah.
You know, just for some invisible line. Well, not invisible thread, actually. You just need a fishing line, you know. And
But Stefan also created the self-folding floating bill. That we have on tape. But we never released that one. And it's sad, you know, because Mark Wilson should pay him $1,000 in 1990 because of the rights to use it on his video education.
Yeah.
But he forgot.
he, quote, forget. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
So people can forget.
That's true. Yes. And I think there are a lot of times when someone has a particular celebrity status, if you will, among magicians, and people are willing to share ideas and saying, hey, what do you think of this? Why don't you take this and work with it or whatever? Hmm. And with honest intent, I believe that they just kind of say, okay, well, that's interesting, forget about it. But they have so many different ideas and things bouncing around their head that they kind of forget that someone else had shown this to them.
Yes.
I think it's kind of like a comedian who is given a joke.
Yes.
And then they kind of forget about that. Mm. And then later something bubbles up and says, you know, that, hey, this is kind of a funny thing. And I remember something somewhere. Maybe this will work with that. Mm. And I think that's a lot with some magic inventions also that people tend to forget maybe where they had heard it. Mm. And legitimately so. I mean, that in all honesty, I don't think they feel like they've stolen anything. It's just they've forgotten.
100% true. Then you have also the opposite, like Mr. Ben Harris in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sad because I was, me and Stefan had a company called Magic Vision that was selling inventions and stuff, and that we was traveling over here to find the funniest things to take over to Sweden. And he ripped us up badly.
Ben
and,
did?
Yeah, Ben, yeah, and
I've
others.
I've heard that about several things. You know, I've known Ben for a long time, but you know, I've not heard that name in a decade, probably. Does he still perform?
Well, I think that when you do too many wrongs, you disappear.
You disappear.
Because you're in the magic business.
Yeah, yeah. It's a small world.
One of the nicest memories from a convention is that I'm the only one in Sweden, actually, that can say that the first time I met David Copperfield, he was in mine audience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 1989. And I had the world premiere of an effect called Star Prediction Box that night. And also, oh, yes. We left, oh, yes, Michael Lamar gave us his biggest book ever. We handled it to him. 1 o'clock in the night at Caesar's Palace in his Vulcano suite. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that Mr. Copperfield amazed me. He'd done two shows that day. Mm-hmm. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. He was leaving Vegas 2.5 hours later to do a TV special, The Orient Express.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Where do you sleep? When do you sleep?
Yeah, exactly. I've often wondered that too, you know, that he has shows and then when he goes and does these tours at his museum until 3 or 4 in the morning and, you know, or later and then has to go home and he must only sleep 3 or 4 hours a day.
Yes, no. But he's doing amazing stuff.
Yeah,
and when you watch him and others, you're like, oh, you feel like a nobody.
Who's one of your favorite magicians? I assume he is, but who else do you like? Who are some of your favorites?
Kevin James.
Kevin's great. He's a great inventor.
Yes, yes.
Finn John,
yes, yes.
Gaetan Blum,
yes. Oh, we can continue for a long time. And so sad, so many of the great ones that we love, they entertain someone else now.
Mm, yeah. Mm. Yep, like Johnny Thompson, Daryl, and others. Yep.
Yeah.
Tom Mullica, so many people who have left. Yep, that's true.
My memory of Tom Mullica was when we told them that we was at Lady Luck, and they played basketball on one-wheelers, and one of the guys missed the pad.
On one-wheelers, you mean like unicycles?
Yeah. Unicycles, okay. Yeah. One-wheeler is something else.
Well, no, it's...
Well, in Swedish, that's a direct translation from the Swedish.
Yes, okay.
But he missed one pass with the basketball, and an old man close to the stage, straight in the face
with the ball.
And he goes back, boom, disappears among the audience, and the ball comes up again. But you can see that they're looking. What happened? What happened? You know. And suddenly you see three people crawling on the floor with papers in their arms. He's like, "Don't sue us. Sign here. Don't sue us." Oh, it was a mess. And Tom Mulca was like, "Whoa! I would love to see that." No, he had some unique tricks too.
Do they have anything like America's Got Talent in Sweden? Do they have Sweden Got Talent?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever been on that show?
They asked me 7 times, mm-hmm. and I declined because I was thinking, what talent? I've been doing this for over 30 years now. Like, but the 7th time, someone said, hey, Louvi, no, do it, because it could be good, because they want to sign me for something. I said, okay, I do it. And the thing was, 800 people in the audience, I was thinking, if they laugh in all the right moments, mm-hmm. I'm satisfied. It's good for me. And they did.
I assume you have the same amount of time, like 90 seconds yeah. or something, just yeah. a very short, yeah.
Yeah. And the first judge said, Louvi, it was entertaining from the first to the last second.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the second one, she is a very hard woman, she says, oh, I want to see more of you. And I said, you want a date? Okay, and they were laughing.
Yeah.
Now, the third one was also a lady, and she just said no. And I was thinking, like, okay, you didn't listen to the audience then. Afterwards, I found out she was in love in one of my competitors.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And he said, he went into the final. I love him.
Was he a magician also?
Yes. I love him. He's a great guy from Gothenburg. So afterwards, I think, oh, that's a good way of getting rid of the competition.
Yeah.
But the fourth judge, uh-huh. who is the meanest, hardest beep person
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
He looked at me, and to this day, I regret I didn't have a record machine on me that I recorded this, because he said, Louvi, it was too much entertaining and too less of the magic.
Wow.
And I was standing there like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I was too entertaining? Wow.
Too entertaining.
I'm the first one who... I was failed because I was too entertaining. I was actually smiling the whole way back home.
Yeah. That is a wonderful quote. Wow.
And you have it on somewhere in the tape, but yeah. but I was thinking they will never show that. They will never show it, mm-hmm. and they didn't.
And so you did not go forward to the next
no
round,
and okay. I didn't mind. I had the plan to do my. Oh, here's a question for you. What is your thinking about effect with bloods when it comes to the perhaps eating dinner or shall eat dinner or something? You know, needle and knives and blood.
If I'm doing this in the context of a dark, bizarre type of a show with a certain audience that is expecting that kind of a thing, it's perfect. If I'm doing it in the context of a seance, it would be borderline probably okay. In the context of a show that I would normally do, no, I wouldn't think it would be appropriate because it would be too gross, something that I don't think my audience would want to see. For me, I think also having to do, like, you know, Tom Mullica used to do cigarettes in the mouth, that kind of a thing. You know, my wife was a dental hygienist, and she didn't like things in the mouth. Or if somebody pulls a card out of their shoe, that just doesn't do it for me. You know, things like that. Yeah. Blood, oral things, or, you know, they pull it, you know, a card out of their zipper or something, you know, that it's just gross.
I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. And for 16 years, I totally, you know, all the thing with the needles and stuff. And the man, Stefan Schützer, who was he's the inventor, he gave me for a gift, knife through arm.
Mm-hmm.
And the solution to apply the blood.
Yeah.
Terrible. Mm-hmm. Sorry. It was a martini. It's terribly complicated to put the blood in. It was a mess, and I got bloody, and I'm like,
yeah.
not my type of thing. So it was lying 2 years, and then I had a New Year party with just friends I'm knowing, and I was, let's do it for fun. And I did it as everybody else I seen doing it on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction was... amazing. And I'm like, I start thinking, why, how can I apply this in my show? Because I don't like this.
Right.
And last time I met Greg Wilson, I was standing quite close to him, and I tell him my routine. And suddenly he starts screaming like a madman. I actually took one big step back and said, what's now? And he's silent and said, why didn't I come up with this one? So that was good.
Yeah.
Because I use a spectator. And a nice thing is now, from being exactly as you, negative, nothing,
right.
I can barely wait to do this routine.
Hmm.
My show, you know, I'm not a religious guy, but I don't swear. No dirty jokes, no nothing. So when I come to the end, one of the first thing I say, I will give you a question now. It's just a yes or no answer. Normally, 99 to 100% replies yes. But remember, it's your choice.
Yeah.
Okay? And I go, would you now, for the final effect, would like to see something really horrifying? And it's always like 99. And I say, okay. Yeah. So you want to see blood. Okay. So from there, everyone around the world has seen, they chop the half arm on the self. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking about the following. First I say, is it anyone in the audience that really sensitive for blood? And actually, sometimes when someone raises their arm, I say, okay, what's happening? Why faint? Oh, perfect. Join me on stage. they almost go, walks on their knees up to the stage.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just pick one and I tell them that, do we have a doctor or a nurse in the audience? And I love when it's one of those there, because they can confirm what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because around the world, big, muscular men comes in. And when the nurse come with the syringe, they faint.
Yeah.
And only one drop of blood on the finger, they faint.
Mm.
And no one knows why it is like this. Now, however, if you know how the body works and you put the finger on the right nerve, you can take away the feeling, you know, you don't need any syringe to take away the pain.
Yeah.
And today we have this man, he's called Scott, okay?
Yeah.
Let's take away the feeling in his right arm. So I put on protection for your clothes.
Yeah.
So it's only your right arm that are free. I put blankets on the floor in case of blanket.
Okay.
Yeah. And I put protection so you can't see anything.
Like a blindfold?
Yes. And you need this one. I actually did this on an NHL pro who won Stanley Cup. He said, no blindfold.
Okay.
He was screaming badly.
A hockey player?
Yeah, player, you know. It's hilarious, you know. It was...
Screaming. Okay.
Yeah, because something goes wrong when you see a half arm. So, but here's a nice touch. When he has this on, I put my finger on the nerve that I pretend to find. I do some one-liners between these starts working.
Yeah.
I do this. Now it feels numb. The blood goes slower in your arm. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
And I have this beautiful American doctor's bag. I open it up.
Yeah.
I remove something that is wrapped in a white cloth. And I have Cesar Alonso sound system. So if I touch on a thing on the stage floor, in the same time I say, many people ask me, Louvi, why don't you do this on yourself? And I say, are you mad? And I pull out the knife and I touch this.
Yeah.
And the psycho. Yeah.
Like psycho. Yeah.
And the knife I'm using, I'm very proud. This is my design. And I have one Austrian magician who has four different models. The fourth was mine. And he said, it's the best in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. It's. I can show you later the system I done. But the thing is, instead of doing this half arm, I start, you know, a little bit. And people are like
starting to try and saw into it. Yeah.
And start going slowly from the arm, you know, a little blood, you know. And people are like, oh, no. And I look at him and like, doesn't he smile a little bit? I think I can go a little bit deeper. And I said, Scott, and I'm holding your arm. I said,
yes.
If you feel something, and I put the knife down, yeah. don't do any sudden moves. And when you say no, I do the move. And suddenly, no! And half arm. And people are screaming. It's hilarious. The blood. And the thing is, when I finally get the knife out, I said, you know, the final thing is goes for Scott here. You're the big star. And the music goes on. And I clean up the arm. And right. everybody is in positive shock. Huh. And so I've been doing this from year 2000 to now.
Wow.
Never, ever got any complaints. Never.
Interesting.
The opposite. Can you please do that?
Are you only doing that in Sweden, or are you doing it worldwide?
Worldwide.
Okay. I will do it
tomorrow.
Okay. Interesting. Well, listen, as we start to wrap up, I thank you, first of all, for being my guest, and thanks for coming and chatting for a little bit. Of course, I know you listen to the podcast. You know I always like to know what your magic word is. What's your philosophy?
Oh, the magic word. Yeah. Oh, boy, yes. I heard so many great magic words because I love to listen at you when I'm flying, when I'm sitting in the car, when I'm bored, you know.
Yeah.
So many great episodes, so many nice guests you interviewed. I remember one who just spoke about that you can never make a joke about the effect. I was thinking, I understand what you mean, but if I should take that advice, I would never have been able to do this 36 years as a professional.
Mm-hmm. I think Armando Lucero maybe.
Because you have to mix humor in it, but sometimes, boom, do that strong effect, yes. Mm-hmm. But if it's too much serious stuff, it creates an error in their head and becomes too heavy. But I would say something like this. Many years ago, a guy approached me and said, you know, I was standing in for another guy that couldn't do it.
Yeah, filling in.
Yeah. And he said, you know, I think you're better than another one. And I said, no. You've seen him doing this 23 times in a row. Now I come with a new act. And he said,
hey, just something different.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my reply. And he said, no, you don't. That was not what I mean. I mean, the thing, do you know what the difference is? No, he said, I will show now. This is not TV, but you know, when he do magic, the audience sits like this. And when you did it, they're sitting like
this.
They
lean forward.
Yes. And what you're doing is activating your audience. So my magic word is, don't forget to activate your audience.
Wow, I like that.
So my first 20 minutes in the show is actually, boom, boom. It's a lot of things with the audience.
Yeah.
They are ready to go.
Well, that's something that I had said on a podcast here recently where you hear magicians who will start the announcement before the show will say, sit back and relax, prepare to be, you know, amazed. No, I want people to be on the edge of their seat, you know, get comfortable on the edge of your seat, because that's where you're going to remain for the rest of the show. Please welcome Louvé Melander. You know, I think that that's important that people already know something's going to happen. You know, you don't want them to kind of sit back and start yawning and, you know, getting too relaxed.
And the thing is, many, 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 many years, I had the problem with, you know, you say to the guy who will present you that, don't mention anything with holding your wallets now, because, you know, and say, no. And the first thing they do is mention that. Okay, hold your wallets. Because actually, it happened for me one time.
Yeah.
Now, all the 300 people, it was the president for the company, approached me and say, oh, Louvé, that was great. I need my wallet back. Wallet? The wallet. Yeah, I mean, I have no wallet. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. That's why those 30 years of thinking led me out where I am today. And on the lecture, you can see and hear what I'm doing.
Yeah.
To have that start, and you don't need to think about what they say about you.
Mm-hmm.
And when this podcast is over, I cannot tell you, Scott. cliffhanger.
Well, thank you, Louvé. I appreciate that very much. It's been a real pleasure.
It was an honor to come here, an absolutely amazing period of my life to finally drink my best martini ever.
Cheers to you.
Oh, yes. Cheers. And
so the Magic Word Podcast. That was Louvet Melanda. Melander. This is Scotty Hoff. Well, thank you, Louvet. That was wonderful. I appreciate your time and also your fine taste in martinis. I'm glad that you enjoyed that and also our time together. I certainly did, and I hope that you listeners also enjoyed our chat and got something out of it then as well that you might be able to take away from that so that you might be able to apply that towards some of your knowledge of international magicians there as well, maybe trade shows and other kinds of things. Anyhow, fantastic. Thanks very much. Appreciate it, Louvet. Look forward to our next conversation and the next time we get to see each other. Well, as we mentioned early on the podcast that we have now selected a name for a winner for this contest we've been running for the last 3 weeks. And the contest, of course, was offered by themagicbookshop.com. And the contest was for $100 of free magic books mailed to you, compliments of themagicbookshop.com. So I think it's time to announce the winner. And the winner's name is Clint Smith. Congratulations, Clint. I have sent your email address on to Eric Citron, and he should be contacting you shortly. You are the lucky winner, and I give you something to read and to study and to learn, so this way then you can go out and spread magic joy to the rest of the world. Well, listen, in that particular regard, I now want to announce a new contest that we are beginning this week. When you go to the magicwordpodcast.com blog, you will see at the bottom a new contest form, and that is for a chance to win a 5 ebook bundle of books that have been written by Michael Breger. Now, he's offering 2 of these bundles, and there are 5 books in each, they're both the same, and because they are PDFs, that they can be emailed to you wherever you reside in the world. So this particular contest is not limited to those who reside in the U.S., but it's open to people around the world. So I encourage you to go to themagicwordpodcast.com and sign in down there below, where there is a registration form that you can enter the contest to win one of these 2 bundles. So thank you, Michael Breger, for offering this. And one of the reasons he's doing that is because he has just released a new book that's called Expert at the Cod Table. That's COD, Cod Table, by S.W. Ordfish. And it is written very much tongue-in-cheek and has a lot of great card tricks as well as a couple other things that are non-card related particularly, but I know that you will enjoy, and his writing style is wonderful. Although it will be offered elsewhere around the world by various dealers, but initially it's going to be offered by Big Blind Media, BBM, over in England. So he has a good relationship with them, and they're going to be the first to start offering that, so you might check that out. If your name is not drawn as a winner, and you still are interested in the book, or you just can't wait and you want to get that one, I believe that they will have that available, and I think the American price on that is $20. I don't know how much it would be in British pounds, or what they have to offer, but I'll try to find a link to that and put that on the website. So this way that you can order a copy of that directly if you just can't wait, or if you have the other 4 ebooks of his. And something topical right now is I want to remind everyone about an upcoming live lecture that will be for free that's going to be over Facebook Live. We are releasing this episode today here on Thursday, April the 9th in 2020. And next week, that is on Monday, April 13th, we'll have a live lecture on Facebook Live with Bill Wish, talking about Slidini. He's going to teach 3 of Slidini's tricks. He's going to teach the Slidini palm, the Slidini pins, as well as Slidini's timing and misdirection. And then also take your questions and try to have some time for some Q&A afterwards as well. So it's going to be a pretty packed hour, and it's going to be available to all of you. All you have to do is to go to Facebook and just do a search for the Magic Word Podcast, like our page, and that way that you'll be ready. And so this way you can sign in. It will begin at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, which is GMT minus 5. So
check your local listings as to what time it might be in your time zone. I know this is going to be a seminal event and a singular event, so please come and view that. If you cannot do it in real time and ask questions for Bill, that this will remain on the podcast page for a few weeks before it's moved over to his private page. So again, if you miss it, you'll be able to watch it again at a little bit of a later time, but there's nothing like a live experience where you can actually enjoy it with others and ask questions as we go along. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to activate your audience. This is Scotty out.